Welcome once again to the newest edition of 3 In, 3 Out, the most unique Seahawks recap show in the multiverse. I'm your host, Clinton Bonner. Coming out and give a follow on Twitter at Clinton Bonn. I am joined by the one, the only, the great Brandon Schultz. Find him out on Twitter at SeahawkersPod. And folks, if you're here for the first time, please, youtube.com/SeahawkersPodcast. Hit the subscribe, hit the like, drop the comments. It really helps out. And of course, if you want the audio stream, just go search Seahawkers Podcast. Heck, you could even just go search Seahawks Podcast. It'll come up. You know why it will come up? Because it's a great podcast. 5 shows a week. Brandon, Adam, Phil, Wilson, myself, the whole flock, everybody out there. It's a whole thing. It's a vibe. Brandon, just like the Seahawkers Podcast is a vibe, our Seattle Seahawks, they are a vibe. How you doing, man?
I am doing outstanding, Clinton. I mean, heck, we're almost to the bye week. Yeah, and I mean, here we are at the top of the division. The Seahawks are tearing it up. There isn't another team within the NFC West that has a record above 500. So I'm happy when our team is winning and all of the other teams within the division aren't as good. So now we just have to go out, finish off the season, fend off those dirty San Francisco 49ers, and I'm going to be feeling even better for the season.
Yeah. Now that the 2-game lead, you know, 1.5 game, whatever, division in our graph, we're in the pole position. You know, we are in the pole position. So right. Yeah, that's it. The everything kind of keeps on changing as this year goes on, right? It just keeps on inching towards bigger and bigger expectations. And as the expectations shift, this team and certain players, they seem to be coming up bigger and bigger and bigger in these spots. The coaching, that much sharper. Third down conversions, that much bigger. It's been a vibe, Brandon. It's been a lot of fun. So on 3 In, 3 Out, if this is your first time through with us, what we'd like to do is you're not going to hear lots of talk about the biggest plays of the game or the most obvious players and plays of the game. Not the style here. Right? We have plenty of other shows on the Seahawkers podcast stream for all that. And that's great. Great fodder. We love to celebrate it. What we're going to dive into, Brandon, you know this already, is the nooks, the crannies, the micro moments, all these like little things that maybe, you know, you noticed the first time through, but on the rewatch, you really get excited about it. And if anybody has access to, you know, go back NFL Plus, we're going to give you the timestamps. We're going to talk about these individual plays and we're going to get fired up while we do it. Now it is 3 In, 3 Out. So we talk about 3 on the good side of the ledger and 3 on the not so good side of the ledger. But Brandon, when we win by for 4 weeks in a row by 10 plus points, my job of, you know, curating the outs, Brandon, it's getting harder and harder and harder each week not to want to just go 5, 6, 7, 12 ins deep because I see a lot of good on tape.
I'm seeing a lot of good on tape. I'm seeing a lot of good in the chat room as we're recording this live out on YouTube. We got Josh DeHuman in at $4.99 with the super chat saying, "What's good, my brothers?" And this has been just an outstanding start to the season. I know Devo Martzall is enjoying it as well, saying it feels good to feel good about our team. Thanks for what you do, guys. Go Hawks.
Well, hey, Devo, first of all, great name. Second of all, thank you so much. And Josh DeHuman, awesome, awesome follow out on Twitter himself. Go find him out there. And Josh is always hanging out in the Discord. Also, if you become a member of the flock, which starts at only $3 a month for that, you get access to the Discord and you can hang out on game day, which is a lot of fun. And Josh DeHuman saying on screen there, got to look at them nooks and crannies like Sherlock Holmes. Absolutely. I don't care if it's Matlock, Columbo, Sherlock Holmes, you name your Magnum PI for that matter. It just doesn't matter. We have got to unveil these. But Brandon, there, you know, we like to tell the folks that on 3 In, 3 Out, it's not a lot about, you know, rules and regulations, but we do have one rule. We have one overarching rule on 3 In, 3 Out for the life of me, Brandon. I have my sticky notes everywhere. I've got my MVC sticky note. I've got a sticky note to make a certain statement to make sure I bring up a different in within an in, because that's what you do when you win. But I can't for the life of me remember the one rule that governs us all. Please do your thing and please tell me again. And you know, for Christmas, Brandon, sticky notes this year. I need more sticky notes.
You know, look, normally I would get on you about having, you know, forgetting the one rule that governs the show week to week, especially when the Seahawks are in the victory position. But there's a lot going on with this particular win. I mean, this last game, we had Geno Smith throwing a pick six. And I mean, it's things like that can really throw you even off your personal podcast game.
Yeah.
But Clinton, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes. It doesn't take Sherlock to remember that when we win, we start with an N.
We start with an N, Brandon. That's darn straight. All right, let's get to that first N because we got so much to digest and, you know, go through. And I hope everybody can tell. I'm freaking fired up, Brandon, at 6-3. Let's hit that whammy. Let's go. All right, first whammy here. We like to wet the canvas a la Bob Ross style. All right, it is quarter one, 1:42 to go. We're up 7-3. It is a 3rd-and-3, kind of more like a 3rd-and-4 on the rewatch, kind of a real long three. And we're at the 27-yard line. This is, now we got, let's see, Geno in shotgun. Trips left, Fant's ISO to the right-hand side, kind of playing that big slot. He's not exactly on the line, just in that big slot position. Fant had a heck of a game in the stats line, you know, really showed out, which is quite nice. Homer's into block on this play, by the way. If you go on the rewatch, I can't decipher what he blocked. He didn't block anybody.
When we start with an N, right? Starting with an out for Homer? What's going on here?
Homer just kind of looks around. It's kind of funny. But, nothing's really happening around him there. But what does happen is number 97, Cam Thomas, this is the Cardinals guy. He's kind of beating Cross on this play. Cross is holding his own, but Cross is getting pushed back and really kind of crumpling that whole side there. So Cross is kind of, you know, it's a beat on the play. So we got number 25, doesn't really throw a block. And we got Cross, who kind of gets beat. And you're like, Clint, this is the end, right? We're on the, yes, this is the end column. I remember the rule now. But this particular play, I got to give the love right away, man, to Geno. Geno, calm, cool, collected. We saw it all game long, but it's about the micro moments. It's about the microcosms and picking this one out nice and early. He does like a little Tom Brady slide step to the right inside the pocket, and then almost like a jump throw to Fant on a rope 14 yards downfield for a huge, huge first down conversion. It's the presence, the coolness, the ice in the veins, the accuracy, and man, I mean, Brandon, those crumple zones where sometimes the walls were closing in on Geno. And it's not just this week. He is calm in the pocket. He sits there. He knows he's going to take a hit. He's delivering strikes. He does it again. We could talk about Geno probably for 2 hours straight, but I can't get through three ends and not recognize how darn good he's playing. Loving the Fant connection. This was the Fant week, but the first big end, Brandon, that's got to be Geno's. Has to be.
Yeah, I love that we're starting this off with Geno with this particular play because it does. It shows how within the pocket, when it's crumpling in on him, he's able to find space within it to move up and make the throw and into a relatively tight window. I mean, Fant on this play, he does a nice job of, you know, sitting down kind of in the zone with his defender to his side. And then just as Geno's like just ready to start throwing the ball, he's moving to his right to make the catch and kind of just to make enough separation away from his defender. But it's a play that's made entirely by Geno stepping up and to his right in a very limited amount of space and making an accurate throw for the first down.
It's lovely. And on that same drive, it's a little bit later, we go into the next quarter. This is how you double stack it in right out of the gate here. But it involves Fant and it involves Geno again. But just to give a little more love to the Geno train, that flea flicker or like, you know, the toss right to Walker where he throws it back legally, not like the Cardinals try and do things, legally back to Geno. And then this is the play where you see everybody and their grandmother and great-great aunt's grandmother always take the deep shot. In what world do you see a quarterback, you know, not check it down, but throw to the tight end over the middle as opposed to, well, it's this play, so I've got to try it deep. I've got to try the shot to DK on Buddha. Nope. He's still tight window, by the way, between four dudes. Yeah. He finds Fant there again. So just the sense that's on Gino's like head right now, the way he's playing, it's just so freaking smart, man. And again, I'm not the one to really rush to the stars, but these are like moments that we just, you don't see many quarterbacks do. And he's doing it every single week, every week.
That reminds me, it was a tweet by Field Goals today that they were putting out there the number of mid-range passes by Geno. And I think this particular play fits into that kind of 18 to or 10 to 19 yard window. And it was all of last year. I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but I feel like I'm going to be pretty close. It was all of last year, and I think they had maybe 82. It was in the low 80s for the number of throws in that 10 to 19 yard range. And now through eight games, they're somewhere in the mid 60s. Right. And I think I saw one of the comments was, well, how many of those were games that Geno started that he hit those intermediate throws of 10 to 18? Because he did have the starts against Jacksonville, too. So, yeah, it was it's pretty amazing that he's found a really nice niche for this team. In that 10 to, it's still a relatively, well, I guess what are pass plays? I think explosive pass plays are for more than that. But you're picking up first downs, you're moving in chunks of yardage, and it's impacting the offense well.
Yes, chunk plays as they are statistically, you know, counted. Great. It's cool. You know, if you hit a dude for 14 yards on a rope and you do that over and over and over again, that's cool. That's also cool. Those are chain movers also, right? So it's a great way to start it. Had to celebrate with Geno to start it out there. All right. It wasn't all roses. Although again, Brandon, I had to cut out so much stuff. I'm so happy. So happy we have something extra to talk about later, but we do have a job to do. We've got to get to some of these outs, hit the whammy. Let's talk about some of these blemishes. Okay. And there were blemishes. It wasn't by any means perfect, but quick aside, both my kids play tennis, kind of really take into the sport. And we have a coach, real good dude. And, you know, I take my kid there, I drop the kid off. And if my kid's getting frustrated, the coach goes, hey, did your dad, you know, drop you off at perfect today? And he's like, no, he dropped me off at practice. He goes, okay. I thought I dropped you off at perfect the way you were acting. Great line, by the way. I shared that with the multiverse. So now I use it at home. And I think it's a wonderful way to check the kid when they're getting a little too emotional over small things, as adults and humans and kids will do. And this is me. I get emotional over small things. So I'm one to talk, right? But here it is. Q1, 6:17 to go. Still 7-3 us. Arizona's got the ball. It's 1st and 10 we had the ball. And it's on our own 25-yard line. So Seattle's got the ball. This is basically right after the D-hop touchdown, right? Where he gets free. He's on Mafe, just kind of beats him, goes around the bend, touchdown. They kick off and we have where you don't take it out of the end zone. Oh, touchback. That's the word, touchback. So, right, we're at the 25-yard line. First play here. In this particular play, we have a Buda Baker blitz, which is kind of fun to say. Geno under center, Eskridge going left to right across the screen there. And in this play, you got Buda just flat out beats Ken Walker on a blitz. And it's kind of ugly. Now I love Ken Walker, and I want him out there as much as possible. And we'll talk a little bit later why. Something else comes up later. I'm like, I want Ken Walker out there on third downs. I want Ken Walker out there as much as he possibly could be out there. He's still a rookie. He's still got things to learn, and I want him to learn from this, you know, this particular tape and this call out. The other piece is too, talk about dudes like kind of like not seeing what's going on. This is a really, really nice setup tight end screen. Like they're blitzing, and then JJ Watt and I forget who else, they're fooled. It's actually set up. They're fooled. Like, holy crap. And it's to Fant. Again, this was Fant week. This was the week of the Fant. So, but as soon as Fant receives it, freaking Zaven Collins was on the right hand side. He was on the right edge, and he peels off and comes all the way back across and makes this tackle. The funny part is, if you go rewatch it, he actually runs right behind Austin Blythe, because Blythe has no idea he's there. Blythe kind of gets to second level and turns right and starts to run towards Fant to try and pick up a block. And Collins runs right behind him and then just makes a really nice play. So it's more of a more of a hat tip to Collins for making that play. I wish Blythe was a little more aware in that situation. I'm going to give the out to Walker because he's a stud. He's a star. I want him to pick up blitzes better. So he's on out there on third down. So the rookie getting the naughty cookie here, Brandon. I know it's two touchdowns. He's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't care.
When I looked at the Pro Football Focus numbers after this game, there was one giant red dot that stood out among all of the offensive players, and it was Ken Walker's pass block grade of 10. And a lot of times they get a really low grade, and it can be for one particular play. And I think you've probably nailed the exact play that this gave him the super low grade because, yeah, Ken Walker was only in for three pass blocking snaps and got a 10 as far as the grade sheet goes for PFF. This probably had a little something to do with it.
Yeah, and this is not like the good kind of varsity blues 10. This ain't, I give it a 10.
No, this is 10 out of 100. So essentially one out of 10.
But yeah, not good. And it's okay. This is also like one of those, it's okay, but this is what we do on 3 and 3 out. We're going to pick nits. And, you know, we just want him to be, we know he didn't really do it at MSU. Wasn't his jam. Like he just wasn't asked to do that. Another thing he really wasn't asked to do at MSU was catch the ball. But he's catching the ball pretty darn well. 3 receptions, 20 yards. He gets the ball. Guess what, Brandon? Whether it's handed to him or he catches it, when he gets a chance to juke people, he's doing freaking good. Yeah, he's good. He's good at that. So that's how you turn a little micro out into an in. Always an in. We got R. Ryan, 911, 911. He's our live executive producer with the $9.99 super chat in. Clinton for bringing the Goonies quote last week because Goonies never die and it's our time down here. That's absolutely right. You got to go down well with the Goonies. If you got, I'm not sure who's, you know, who are, well, I look at our metrics. Our data says we have mostly 25 to 55 year olds. Pretty much 90% of our listeners on YouTube are right between 25 and 55, which makes sense. So for the youngins out there, if you've never seen Goonies, go watch it. And if you're a parent and haven't shown your kids Goonies yet, a wonderful, wonderful rewatch. Really, really fun. Brandon, is there a go-to? Is there like a favorite movie in the Schultz household that, you know, that you were super happy that when you shared it with your girls, they took to it? Because I hate it when you share something and you get the opposite reaction. Right. Like, no, this is good.
Oh, the great family movies, especially when you can go back to the 80s and share some of those movies. We've been... it's gone over really well, I feel like, that as far as hitting on most of the movies. I don't think any of them, though, hit harder than Back to the Future and the entire trilogy. And it made me super happy that that was one that was not only watched and enjoyed, but rewatched.
I love that. That's a good get. Not quite 80s for me. The one that really, well, The Goonies is a big hit in this house. But I'd say the movie that for whatever reason, well, I believe I know the reason because it's damn funny. It's probably it's my favorite movie of all time, but I didn't want to bias my kids. I just put it on and said, hey, you might like this, was What About Bob?
I'm not there yet. I am. I'm working on it.
Yeah. So they adored that movie. They love Bob Wiley. They love the nonsense. They love just the arc of Bob Wiley is fantastic. And then as they watch it the second and third time, they realize how darn good Richard Dreyfuss is, like how freaking funny Richard Dreyfuss is in that movie too. It's delightful. So, all right, we got jobs to do. A little side quill there. That's okay. When you win, you start with the in, and you get to talk about some wonderful things like What About Bob? All right, we got more wonderful things. Brandon, you know what to do. All right, it is now. We're back on the inside of the ledger. Q2, 1:14 to go. Still 10-7. Right? Still 10-7, 1:14 to go in the second quarter. Seattle is at Arizona's 43-yard line. Okay. So this is after Arizona is at the 43-yard line. I keep getting that mixed. This is after a big Kyler Murray run. He had several. This is not the fumble play where Neil tips it loose. That was a big run as well. But this is after a different run he had where he slides down for the first down. Right away, they're in their no huddle. And they throw a wide receiver screen to Robbie Anderson, who Adam pegged it is not very good at football any longer. Like he had a rough day. rough day, right?
He cost the Cardinals. Like, I feel like Robbie Anderson was probably on our team more than he was the Cardinals because he was a big part of the Seahawks win in this game against Arizona.
A real life, not that the other one's not real because it's very real, extremely real, but a real life MVC, most valuable Cardinal, but for the Seahawks was definitely Robbie Anderson. On this particular play, not Anderson's fault, actually on this play, it's probably not even Hopkins' fault because Mike Jackson makes a heck of a play on this. We've seen our team get burnt on wide receiver and just other screens so often that when we sniff it out, we play it well. Woolen had a really nice breakup on a different screen earlier in the game or whatever it was in the game. And this particular play, Mike Jackson just squares up with D-Hop, recognizes the screen right away, and they're in no huddle. They're go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And sheds D-Hop like he wasn't even there, makes a stick on Anderson. It's a 4-yard loss. It was just, it's one of those get up and I'm fired up for it. Mike Jackson is, you know, he's not going to get the limelight, not every week at least, right? Played really, really well 2 weeks ago, played a nice game yesterday. I just like to call him out because, I mean, when we stop wide receiver screens with this Texas Tech air raid nonsense, it deserves, the cranny deserves the love. Mike Jackson wearing the in.
Well, and it's a heads up play too, in the sense that you can't get on D-Hop for not blocking at that point, because if he does make a block on Mike Jackson, then it's going to be pass interference on the Arizona Cardinals offense with the ball in the air. So you can't block quite yet. And so if Jackson, the credit goes to him because he's diagnosing this. He knows that he can get around the guys and maybe pick up a penalty if he does get blocked before he can make. But if he can get to Anderson in time as the ball's getting there, and that's exactly what he does, gets the 4-yard loss, gets a tackle for a loss that goes in the books as a stop. And Jackson has 5 tackles on the day, which is good enough for leading the team. Third place on the team, but I was going to say leading the team among defensive backs. Kobe Bryant had 6, but Mike Jackson right behind him with 5.
Yeah, it was like you said it perfectly, perfectly diagnosed. And it's just, Woolen gets the deserved credit and will continue to, and blanketing D-Hop, and the numbers are what the numbers are. And teams are stopped pretty much giving him the Revis treatment or the Sherm treatment at this point. A very, very little action his way. You could almost picture Tariq doing the Sherman yawn, right, at this point, because he's like, you're not going to throw to me. That's fine. So Mike Jackson's going to get more and more tested. We saw it here. Lovely play by him. So he's kind of embodying, I don't think the nation knows the defense yet. I think the nation now knows Tariq Woolen because he is who he is. And I think football fans will know, like, Quandre Diggs. You know, they'll probably know Quandre Diggs. Beyond that, I don't think the nation really knows Jordan Brooks. I don't think the nation knows Nwosu. I don't think the nation knows Shelby Harris. You know, it's a bit of a no-name ensemble, if you will, on a national scale. And Mike Jackson's like the leader of that no-name defense, but he's coming up big every single week. So I love giving him the glory. All right, Brandon, we got some more outs. We got some more ins. Why don't we get to that next out? Okay, we are now at Q2, 8:23 to go. It is, again, 10-7. Okay, a big theme here. A lot of this stuff happened right in this because it was 10-7 for a while. But a lot of the, I call it most important, but maybe most intriguing stuff happened in the guts of this game, which was right there, which allowed things to open up later or showed things that, you know, that the cracks were there and we broke it out later. So this time we got Seattle is at the Arizona 44-yard line. This is when DJ Dallas had the nice punt return. So of
everybody
the ones
should remember that, because remember when DJ Dallas caught the punt and then returned it? This was part of the game.
Yes, he didn't let it bounce and go 25 yards, you know, in a bad direction. He didn't fair catch it with about 5 yards of green in front of him. Nope. He caught it and went forward, had a nice return. And on top of that, there was a penalty. So we're starting this drive. It's 10-7. We're starting this drive at their 44-yard line. Now, I like the way the drive starts off. It's a canine run, a canine run. And then we're into like 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3.5. Right. The next two plays, Brandon, The thing that makes me upset about this is that the next two plays don't utilize Geno.
Mm.
They don't utilize DK, Tyler, Fant, Disley, or K9. And they are predetermined plays. One is a pop pass to Travis Homer. So in motion, little pop pass.
Right.
The next play is a shuffle pass to Parkinson.
Right.
My problem with this is I know the score is only 10-7, but on both of our scoring drives, Geno was on fire all day. It might have looked a little choppy, but go rewatch the first field goal drive. Geno's on fire. The DK Metcalf drive, Geno's on fire. We get the ball at the 44-yard line, and we don't give the ball to Geno to make decisions. Those are decision-less plays. Don't do that with a dude who's got a 76, 78, 80%, you know, accuracy rating throwing the ball, who is scanning the field and first read, second read, third read, getting the ball out in time because he's got balls in the pocket, big Mike Dixon balls in the pocket. Really bad job by Waldron. Been loving him all year. He gets the out here. There's no way in heck you could do two plays in a row where it's Homer and Parkinson, and you're not utilizing Geno, who has been the freaking man this year. So shame on Waldron. Called a heck of a game besides that, but he's wearing the out here.
You got 3 yards on first down. You got 3 yards on second down. If you're in this area of the field to where you know that you're going to be going for it in four down territory,
Say it.
Keep pounding the rock with Ken Walker, because there were so many times in this game where I'm like, why are we not continuing to hammer the rock? And a lot of it came in the first half. Now, we really saw him get going in the third and fourth quarter, and it was nice that maybe he was a little bit fresh based on the number of runs that he had in the second quarter, because, it was the drive right after this where they didn't run it a single time with Walker. So they really kind of took him out after that 3 yard run up the middle, just as they were over midfield and into the Cardinals, inside the 40-yard line.
Yeah, they're inside the 40. You framed it up exactly right. If you're not going to let Geno do it, and like you said it perfectly, you recognize it's two down territory. Cool, run the ball.
Maybe he gets the first down on third down.
Correct.
And in a third and four situation, maybe they're not expecting a third straight run.
We're on the same wave here. So I was disappointed with it. And again, there's a ton of beautiful and good that happened that I think Waldron did call a really nice game. Again, he's having a great year. And that it involved Ken Walker. I think we'll call that foreshadowing, Brandon. Maybe we'll just hop on to that last in if you're feeling good about that. Some foreshadowing in Geno's wristband. Lovely. Did you see the story? Did you see the quote on the wristband?
I saw that there was maybe some reluctance in the past of Seahawks quarterbacks wearing a wristband. I don't necessarily know why that would be, but it was in response because Pete Carroll was asked. I believe it was on the Pete Carroll show on Seattle Sports Radio, where he or maybe it was in the press conference too. But it was the question about, because there was a shot of Geno looking down at the wristband. And I guess I hadn't noticed him wearing a wristband this season, but I hadn't quite really paid attention either. But the question was framed with the idea of, wow, you know, the Seahawks have been really great this year at getting up to the line and being ready and not waiting until it was under 5 seconds to snap the football. Now, we've seen a lot of Geno get up to the line and he has about 12 seconds or 15, and then you see him changing the play, doing a lot of talking, and there's a lot happening in a short period of time to where then it's starting to get down to 2-3 seconds, and maybe as a fan you're starting to freak out a little bit, but he has been outstanding at getting the play clock snapped in time. There was the one delay a game in this, but that ended up bouncing back and working out pretty well. So, it was framed in that way. And Pete Carroll saying that it was maybe some reluctance of a previous quarterback to not wear a wristband.
Yeah. And we'll leave it at that. I think Pete framed it nicely enough and just like let it dangle out there without saying too much, just being like, perhaps the guy previous.
Did Ryan call that? Was that your in, or did we just riff on Ryan's in for this particular?
We riffed on Ryan's in. Yeah, we just riffed. No, we're just riffing. We're riffing. This is, We're winning. It's four in a row. When we win, we riff. So just riff it on what Ryan threw out there on YouTube.
It is a nook with a wristband.
It's a full on nook. So hey, it's a reason that if you're out there and you're like you're catching this on audio, and you're like, well, hey, this is a reason. YouTube.com/Seahawkers podcast. We're doing this show live. So as stuff pops up on the screen, I'm like Ron Burgundy. You put it on the teleprompter. I'm going to read it. And Ryan had that good one there. No, but we do have our third in here, Brandon. So here we are. Now we are our Q2. Make sure I got this right. No, I'm totally wrong. Q4, 12-01
to go. You haven't got one right all night, so why don't we just keep it going?
Why start now, right? So Q4, 12-01 to go, 17-14. Seattle is at the 42-yard line. I think it's their own 42. I should write those things down, but I do know it's 3rd-and-1. Okay, so 12-01 to go in the fourth quarter. We're up 17-14, 3rd-and-1. This is the particular play where K9 is kind of set to the right a little bit, but he's kind of like in fullback position. And you got Travis Homer a good 7 yards back in the traditional halfback position, if you will. You know, the announcers were talking about this as being like what they would call pro set back in the day. But this is your Max Strong and then you got your fullback halfback back there. But he's kind of offset. This is the tantamount to a fullback dive. So this is just a turn, put it in Ken Walker's gut. He takes it and he gets three yards in a cloud of dust. And it's an pretty easy first down. I love the play call, but I'm not giving the in to Shane Waldron after he took the out. What I liked the most on the rewatch of this play, I knew I liked the play because I was like, ooh, that's inventive. It's a new wrinkle. We haven't used it like that yet. So I initially wrote it down. On the rewatch, what I was so thrilled to see was the way that Will Dissly bodies J.J. Watt. Mm. It is a fun little rewatch. J.J. Watt is smart. J.J. Watt, he really tries to jump right between Lucas and Dissly because I think he sniffs it out that he sees Walker right there. He's probably thinking, yeah, they're going to try and shoot this gap right here. He tries to just jump the gun there. Dissly handles him so well that by the end of the play, number 99, Watt, is on his tuchus looking up while Walker is just like, you know, beaming past him to the right-hand side and then gets tackled for that 3 to 4 yard gain. And it's a first down. We go on to score on that drive. Brandon, it was simple. It was executed. It was a huge moment where on 3rd-and-1, we ran the ball. And oh, by the way, I think it was also on 2nd down that we also ran the ball to get to 3rd-and-1. And we ran the ball again to get that first down. So it was so cool.
Mr. Phil in and approves of calling out Uncle Will's block in this game. Will, he had a good game overall in terms of PFF numbers. He was top three. Noah Fant was ahead of him. Damian Lewis had a solid game, it looks like, especially in terms of run blocking. Now that I look at the PFF grades, I almost want to go back and watch this game just to see how well Damian Lewis blocked in this game, because I mean, a lot of average grades across the board for the Seahawks in the run blocking, and it's Damian Lewis with an 86.2. So I say that to call out D. Lou in the same moment that we're calling out Will Dissly for an outstanding run blocking moment.
That's okay. It's like a great club sandwich. You know, you go to a good diner and you get the great club sandwich. It's not a double. It's like a triple decker. You get the right toast, lots of mayo, the lettuce, the bacon, the ham, the turkey, the fancy toothpick with the top.
How much
hat
meat
on
is on the sandwich, Clinton?
A lot of meat, man. It's a triple decker club. You know, this is what you get. There's a particular D. Lou play. Let me ask you this: when we get to your play later, does it involve D. Lou at all?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, then I want to share this too. So another one that, like I said, there was so much to trim back. Another play that was really really cool. There's like a 3rd-and-8 later in the game where the Cardinals bring a blitz with 5 and the Seahawks block it so friggin' well. And that's where the Red Sea parts in front of Geno and he takes off and he gets whatever he gets, first down, and he slides on that one. Really nice play. Great read, the right read, and he's gone. If you go rewatch that particular play, I think that's in the third. No, that's in the fourth quarter because I go on that way. If you go rewatch that play, watch what D. Lou does to his dude. It's one of the guys who's blitzing. The guy, like, they just make this awesome iron dome around Gino. It splits open. And right before Gino's about to take off, you see Delu take a cardinal. It was very illegal. He takes a cardinal by his neckline and throws him like 4 yards just towards the opposite end, because the guy's like running upfield and he just takes all his momentum and just throws him. But he really grabs him by the neck.
Oh, wow.
And throws him back.
So he got away with a few penalties in this game.
Oh, yeah. It's so aggressive, and it's so like, he didn't like hold, but he absolutely put his hand into the horse collar, and he wasn't tackling him. Sure. He just used the horse collar to get rid of him. And it is so like a bouncer getting rid of the dude who had way too many drinks. It's like puking on the girl in the corner. Like, and he throws the guy out the bar. Like Delu throws the puker out the
just
bar.
Just like that.
It was very Patrick Swayze Roadhouse-esque. And it was quite lovely. So go rewatch
now,
that.
Now, speaking of 80s movies to show your kids, when do you introduce Roadhouse?
I have a daughter, so I won't. Right. So won't be introducing Roadhouse.
What, you don't want your daughter to find a man like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse?
She would need there's several edited versions she would need to watch Roadhouse, right?
USA. So, USA can be your friend.
Yes, I agree. We could watch Point Break. You know, Point Break is a great one. Nothing like some, bank robbery and shenanigans and football on the beach with Johnny Utah. All right, we got more football to discuss here, Brandon. One more out as we're getting nostalgic today. All right, one more out here. 17-14, quarter three, 1:35 to go. Arizona's at our 32-yard line. Look at this. I almost got this one right. And it's a third and eight situation, okay? Kyler's in shotgun, Connor to the left. And this is the typical... What I hated about this play was, this is the typical, it's third and eight, we're the Cardinals who run this BS spread thing, and we're going to throw it short of the sticks. So they throw it short of the sticks, and I think it was to Rondale Moore, and Kobe Bryant comes up, and he just misses the tackle. And it was in such a big point of the game where it's 17-14 at this point, and they're driving. Misses the tackle. He goes on for the first down. We did have some tackling issues, so I wanted to kind of talk about that in the way that we can on 3-3 out. So Bryant will wear the out, although he got robbed of probably 2 turnover worthy plays, but he's got to tackle better. He's playing good football. He is. He's a rookie. We still need to clean up the tackling. So on that particular play, it's like, dude, Rondale Moore is like 5. I know he's wily, but he's like 5'7", 175, 180. Like, come on, tackle a dude. So he's got the edge.
And Kobe wasn't the worst offender when it came to missed tackles on the day. Shoot, you referenced that that play where they did the forward pass thing twice. I don't know how many missed tackles we had on that particular play. I hope it was because everybody was focused on the fact that it was 2 forward passes and not... that they were actually trying to make tackles, but missed tackles on the day. Let's run through it, because again, I like to look at Pro Football Focus and see where the red dots really jump out at me. And it was Shelby Harris who had a missed tackle with a in the red as far as his tackling grade went. Quandre Diggs in the red for his tackling grade. Nwosu in the red for his, and Bruce Irvin. And so these are all veteran dudes who are in the red for their tackling grade. Did I mention Ryan Neal? Because there are a lot of guys. It's again, I didn't bring up Kobe's name. I didn't bring up Woolen's name or some of these other young guys. It was the vets. And so, yeah, although you are giving the out to Kobe, I also have to call out some of the vets for their missed tackles in this game too.
That's fine and dandy. I think some of the other dudes too, they're kind of getting blamed because they made some great plays to get in position to make like sacks and tackle for losses and didn't, which is a little bit different than just missing a tackle when, you're a slot corner.
Sure.
In that way, because you didn't have to go beat somebody. You're just back in coverage. And the one thing you had to go do, you kind of messed up on. So that's why I gravitate towards that one.
You make a really good point, because a lot of those names being really good players, it's because they are in position to make the tackle and they miss. and not just you are there and should make the tackle and miss, like in this situation with Kobe.
I remember the play exquisitely that Irvin missed. And I remember a play. I remember the play where Harris missed. And I certainly remember the play where, you know, Kyler escapes on Nwosu. But it's like the one piece of all of that is we're about to go play Tom Brady, who doesn't look like Tom Brady.
He did for about 1 minute in that game against the Rams.
Yeah, 44 seconds or so, right? Which is good. We applaud that, Tom. We like that a lot. Even when Tom was at his best, his highest with Randy Moss and that 16-0 team and then 18-0 through the playoffs, right? They go 18-1 and lose to the Giants because the Giants could get pressure with four dudes. And we are getting pressure with four dudes. So that the plays where Kyler Murray is escaping because he's Kyler Murray and he's 5'7" and he's quick and can do those things. Brady's very shifty within the pocket and he's going to do, and he gets rid of the ball quick still. It won't matter. It won't be missed tackles by Nwosu because Brady ain't Murray in that regard. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that all shakes next week. All right. So that was our rundown, Brandon, right? That was our three in, our three out. However, we got our one rule. You reminded me what it was already. When we win, we start with an in. A couple of years ago, it is too hard to get through these wins, especially when we're cooking and winning by 10 points 4 weeks in a row now. First time, I think, since 2014, I think I saw that stat, which is pretty phenomenal that Seattle has won four in a row by 10 or more points. But we also now have the brand in. This is your in. I get to sit back, relax, have a sip of my cold liquid death here. I've got the liquid death. I poured it into the Seahawkers podcast.
There it is.
It's lovely and it's crisp. It's mountain water. Brandon, what is your Brandon while I murder my thirst here?
Right. Well, I want to go back to the third quarter, right after Geno throws the pick six, the interception by Zaven Collins. It puts the Cardinals ahead of the Seahawks 14-10. Now, on the subsequent drive, now this man, he's already gotten in from you, Clinton. But I wanted to call out this particular sequence because it was right after a penalty on Charles Cross for a false start. It backs the Seahawks up after having a pretty good first down run by Ken Walker.
Yep.
But now they're back second and nine. They've got to make up ground because, look, this could turn quickly in this particular situation, especially with a penalty on Cross, now second and nine. And if you aren't picking up the first down here, you're completely giving all the momentum back to the Cardinals if you don't get this first down, if you go three and out. And it was one guy, Will Dissly. Now, Geno Smith had something to do with it, too. But Will Dissly, he caught a 6-yard pass on second and nine, and then he picked up the first down, a nifty little play design to where he rolls out to the outside. Buda Baker's in coverage on Dissly. But he can't get there in time. Dissly gets the first down. The Seahawks able to drive the full length of the field after the interception and ultimately get the touchdown to Tyler Lockett. But it was this particular sequence with Will Dissly making back-to-back plays. I'm giving the end to Uncle Will.
Love it. What was cool about this, and it was even more evident on the rewatch, was the fact that this was the Noah Fant week. Like we talked about. And I think it was Fant who had the best game against the Cardinals a couple of weeks ago. I think he was the guy who popped off too, I believe.
It was a good tight end game overall against the Cardinals few weeks ago.
Yeah. We used, and again this week. What was cool about this, and I love that you're calling it out, is that like while it was the Fant week, when we absolutely positively had to go get it and just take the momentum back and put it back in our corner. It was Uncle Will two times in a row. And they were short area, quick hitters. That last one you're talking about, it's trips left.
Yeah.
And what's so cool is you got Will Dissly, Noah Fant, and Derek Young. I mean, how cool? It's just in general, it's just like, that's pretty cool. You know, that's just interesting. Like rewind the clock back to March. Obviously, we don't even have Noah Fant yet, and Derek Young is not even drafted yet, right? It's just super cool, and it's well executed, well run, and yep, he has a little out pattern. He's wide open. Geno hits him in stride, and it's an easy conversion. That's a tight, and these are the type of things where, you know, without talking so badly about the previous quarterback. These are the things where, like, last couple of years, third and four, we'd see a 50-50 ball down the sidelines. And we're like, what? Why? And we'd hit some of them because he was good at that. But more and more and more and more often, as the years wore on, we hit less and less of them. And it became more frustrating. It's like, dude, take what's there. Take the play design that's on the friggin' wrist, right? So he didn't like the Casio wristwatch. Gino does. It's an Uncle Will season. That's a beautiful end, Brandon. I love it. Brandon, we get the Brandon. Now we got to move on to the MVC, also known as the most valuable cranny. Brandon, why don't you tell the good folks, what is the most valuable cranny? Because it's, you know, how does it manifest? What's it all about?
Well, to go back into the history of the show again, we wanted to make sure we recognize a player on the team for an outstanding contribution. You know, much like we had Will Dissly getting special teams player of the week last week. We had Geno Smith getting like offensive player of the month or whatever the award was that he got. You had Ken Walker getting rookie of the month for the offense. You had Tariq Woolen getting defensive rookie of the month. So there's all these accolades and awards that really recognize some of the best of the best on the team. But there's some guys that sometimes go under the radar, and that's when you came up with the most valuable cranny. And, you know, much like these big awards that show up in the lockers of players, this is also a very real award that shows up in their locker. And here it is, the MVC, maybe even more prestigious than some of the others, those other awards that I mentioned.
I think it is. The other ones might have like the Twitter fanfare at this point, but we'll catch up. We'll catch up, especially in the PNW as we do this, and we will get this 3D printed. We'll get it out to you. Drum roll, please. Whether it's yours, whether it's mine, it don't really matter. Uncle Will takes home the MVC. We could triple stack it with all the things he did well this game. Those little nooks, those little crannies. He was, to me, he embodies what the MVC is. Anytime we can give it to our Montana boy right there, we got to do it. So how do you feel about giving the MVC to Uncle Will and making sure we get that out to the VMAC?
I think he's going to feel good about it. I do. I wonder, though, if he's going to be disappointed at all when he sees like the cool title that was inscribed on last week's MVC.
DJ Dallas analysis.
If it's going to be the Will Dissly, it's just going to say Uncle Will's really good week.
Uncle Will, that's pretty good. You know, that's pretty, Uncle Will's really good week, the MVC. You did it again, Brandon, right on the fly. who needs to rhyme when you can just, you know, spit the truth? So good job with the MVC. That goes to Uncle Will Dissly. The MVC, Uncle Will Dissly. That rhymes, you know, unto itself. So
hey,
there we are.
There we go. We figured it out.
Bringing it full circle. Now we like to elevate and rotate over to another, really the whole thing that's the centerpiece of the show. Even though it's we want to finish strong is what it's all about, because you can't finish 3-3 out in the first quarter. You got to finish it in the fourth quarter. And for that means we go to From the Flock, which is we extract and get all the nooks and crannies that you saw. And there's myriad ways that you can tell us all about it. Brandon, why don't you tell the flock all about how they can get involved and what buttons they should push to make sure that they get their voice heard on this show? Because again, this is by 12s, for 12s, just like everything we do.
Yeah, if you want to be among the people who get recognized first on the ins and the outs segments, because, you know, really, that's the point where you want to get your name out there. And we go right to the Discord. If you want to be part of the Discord, you can go to getintheflock.com. And at $3 a month or more, you get an invite to our Discord. Of course, if you go in at $12.12 in a month, 12 and above, then you can become a member of our Facebook group, Ring of Honor. We're going to have some of those in here as well. Of course, if you just want to reach out to us on Twitter, you can tweet at Clinton Bond, use the hashtag 3i30, and we'll get your comments in here as well. And or you can just join us live, like people are in the chat room. I'm sure we're going to see some ins and outs as we go on through this. And it's just this is where we call out all the other things that we're really excited about through this game, and maybe some of these other things that we may have missed.
Yeah, and I will say as we go through them, what's kind of nice is the Discord ones, especially, they're in chronological order. I just go in and copy them back out. So in this game, you could kind of start to see like the outs at first, and then it just trends to ins at this lovely crescendo, which was the whole game. And one thing you said too is like joining us live, right? Joining us on YouTube. What was cool last night on the Instant Reaction Show, we had over 160 people at one point, and it's got over 2,000 views already. So A, thank you for hanging out. But every single week, it's like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was like, oh, 95 people. Then it was like 110 people, 120 something people. There was 160 people live just last night watching you and Adam do your thing. And it was joyous. All right. So we are in the Discord. Going to start with PNW Hulk, starting with an out like I foreshadowed. Out. Defense not communicating when Kyler is running it himself. DBs had no idea.
Jeremy Evergreen coming in with the out. And I'm a little bit surprised this didn't show up in earlier on in the show, because an out to Mafe covering Hopkins, or should I say not covering Hopkins, on the touchdown. Very frustrating moment. One, seeing Mafe be the one who is ends up covering, or like Jeremy says, not covering Hopkins. And I think part of the problem with this play is, you know, do you give it to the Cardinals for an outstanding play design because Mafe shouldn't be on him? Or should there be somebody else that's on him? I mean, Kobe Bryant was lined up on the right side. You also had Tariq Woolen lined up on that right side. Of course, I think he takes Moore, who is lined up next to DeAndre Hopkins. So in that shuffle of guys crossing the field, it kind of mixes things up to where you end up getting tight ends and wide receivers like Hopkins mixed up. Yeah, it was an unfortunate play that because Mafe, you can't really get on him for not being able to cover a top five wide receiver in the league.
Yeah.
But
no, I thought to answer how you framed it, I think it's great play design. And I think, I think the Cardinals probably watched the week before. Nwosu on the wheel route covering Barkley was awesome. But if you remember a little earlier in the game, Daniel Jones misses the tight end on like a tight end wheel route where he's matched up with Mafe and he's got him by 3 or 4 yards. Mafe has proven out to be a good edge rusher, a above average edge defender, which is not what he was known for, but he's been really good at it. And he's not quite there yet in coverage. And that's okay. Got to remember, the dude has only played football for a couple of years. Like he is not a seasoned football player. He started playing football late in his life compared to most folks who make the NFL. Let's put it that way. But Jeremy's spot on. But I do give the tip of the cap to the Cardinals in that one. I think they just schemed it the right way, and that is something to watch for. With Brady and Leftwich, they're gonna also watch the tape. I would not be shocked if we see Mafe getting picked on a little bit in those scenarios where he's asked to go cover. So we shall see. Speaking of covering, Wilson Kahn, he is our PNW prop star of the week this week. The youngin', the Princetonian of parlays, beat me out. He beat me out barely, but he did win it. But he came in with the Discord. He goes, out, feel the effing punt, DJ. And Brandon, if you want to wax poetic on what he might be talking about, please do.
Yeah, well, I feel like DJ Dallas is on notice for his punt return coverage. And there was one play in this game where, now, was it a little bit short of a punt? Yes.
A little bit.
It hits the ground and probably goes 15 yards of field position loss for the Seahawks.
The thing is, it was about 20 yards. And the thing is, on the rewatch, I wanted to go back and see like, okay, was it a short punt? The punter is kicking the ball from like his 3 or 4 yard. He's basically lined up on the goal line, mm-hmm. right? He's punting the ball with his step forward from the 3 or 4. The ball hits like the 40-something, like 45-yard line, R45.
And ends up on the 20.
Right. So it traveled 50 yards in the air. So this is not a 38-yarder that just happened to bounce.
So why was he back so far?
That's the friggin' point, yeah. Brandon. That's the point. That's why it's so egregious. So Wilson doing his thing. We got some good stuff here, so why don't you take what Carr had to say?
He's got three ins here. In, the extra point was amazing. In, it is wild how Zen Gino is in the pocket while I'm stressing out of my mind. And in, double false starts for the Cardinals.
Yeah, that was fun. That middle one there, great point, right? Like we're on our couches or wherever we choose to watch it. And I get nervous, like the pocket's collapsing. I'm like, oh my gosh, get rid of it. And just imagine what, you know, a professional like Gino's going through in that moment, staying so freaking calm, which is awesome. Josh DeHuman, we heard him earlier. I think he's watching live. He's got three ins and an out in patience and continued trust in the run game, giving Kenneth time to tire out the defense, which we certainly saw. In Eskridge holding his role as the returner. He did pretty well, at least in that first kickoff. In Noah Fant being incorporated into this offensive attack, and he gets out the call on Diggs, that probably rubbish, contact call that took away the interception. Brandon, you called it out on the instant reaction that you had a hunch that it was probably Diggs doing well and the refs missing it because Kyle might have been out of the pocket when he released the ball. Have you had a chance to rewatch?
I don't have the All 22 access yet. I tried to look before we had the show just to see if All 22 was out quite yet. And I don't know if there was good enough evidence on the TV copy to really confirm it. But I do have a feeling that was a heads up play by Diggs and not a bad play. So
I want to believe.
Well, I have faith in Quandre Diggs that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, agree.
Dr. G giving the out, Clinton, for jinxing the shovel pass. Did you jinx that? Did you call for a shovel pass on fourth down?
No, I think it was probably me, you know, giving kudos the week previous. So that might be Dr. G saying, I beckoned it essentially. So, and Dr. G, if I did jinx it, then I apologize to the flock, you know, shame on me. We got designed Pete's beach house, who was of course, Amy. She goes in Harris, keeping his eye on the ball while blocking, Harris. Is she talking Shelby Harris while blocking? I'm a little lost. What do you think she means?
Was this one of Harris's batted passes? Maybe.
Oh, could be. We didn't talk, we didn't talk Shelby Harris much, and that's a shame. He was in my, like I said, dude, I could have went with like 6, 7, 8 ins. The Shelby Harris sack, thing of friggin' beauty, splits the center and guard. He hits, Murray hard, brings him down. Huge impact play of the game. Shelby Harris, once he had a great first game, he got dinged. And people are like, what happened to Shelby? He's kind of gone away. And in my brain, I'm like, he's probably hurt. He's probably like a little ding. This happens. He's been healthy for a few weeks now, and this defensive line has not looked back. He's been freaking phenomenal.
Barry, a.k.a. Van T, coming in with a 199 super chat with the live in, giving it to the rookie Young on great punt coverage. Yeah, we got to see Derek Young flying down the field, getting a tackle. Nice special teams call out for Barry.
Oh, great job. That was a super cool play, and that is what 3 and 3 outs all about. I like that he was like just laying flat. He was like, and parallel to the line. So it wasn't like his toe was over because you can't touch the line, right? So just really, really nicely executed play from all the special teams there, which was very cool.
I like how Derek in the chat is trading off of penalties that were called versus the ones that weren't. And because Tyler Lockett gets the no call. And so maybe that was it. Maybe the no call on Lockett was the makeup call for Quandre. And yeah, we get the touchdown by Lockett, and we get to hear Buda Baker crying out on Twitter that, for one, how many yards did Tyler shove Buda Baker out of that play to be able to make the catch? Like, I feel like part of that's on Buda.
Yeah, like I think you tweeted about it, like, hey, dude, maybe you should lift more, maybe don't skip leg day, Buda, get a bigger stance.
Maybe he needs leg day too, because obviously his legs weren't keeping him in that play either.
No, he got chased down by Metcalf a couple of years ago. It's like, Buda, you might got to look in the mirror. This might be on you. I do have a slightly different take on the balancing out, though, with the Diggs thing. I think this might be the multiverse's way of beginning to right the egregious wrong of calling an offensive PI on Darryl Jackson in the Seahawks-Steelers Super Bowl many years ago. Which was an absolute ghost call amongst 17 ghost calls in a game we should have ran away with. So I'm not bitter at all, Brandon. I'm not bitter about the
Super Bowl. And I'm sure we'll start getting the makeup calls for Matt Hasselbeck getting called for a penalty when he was just trying to make a tackle.
Yes, that too. It's Anyway, all right, back to this Discord
kids,
we go.
Kids, when you go back and watch Goonies, then go back and watch Super Bowl 40 just to be me. Well, do it in the opposite order. Watch the Super Bowl and then watch Goonies to feel better. Just do it that way.
Yeah, you got to know your history. It's nice to know your history.
All right, where are we at on this list?
We're back to Bobby Boucher.
Out, beefy boy, Phil Haynes, whiffing on his block on the failed fourth down conversion in the second quarter.
He did. He's beat to the punch. That's the shuffle play. Beefy boy, kind of like Phil Haynes, kind of like he knows it. That is partially on him. And he's beat, sniffed out in a really nice play. But Bobby Boucher, he ain't wrong. All right, we're going to go down now to John Ryan's face. He says, in Dallas with a punt return. Little bit of a, you know, that's it. Like that, we're celebrating the fact
a punt
he
return.
Took the ball. And he went north, right? And by the way, he didn't muff that one, which he did muff a different one. It's like, I think we need a different solution. I like DJ Dallas, but not as a punt returner, man. No.
Maybe he can get better. Maybe with enough reps, he can be amazing. Cool.
Offseason. Him and Buddha could work out in the offseason and try and get better. Just not right now.
Carr with the in. 16 forced fumbles this season. I feel like we haven't given Ryan Neal enough due. And once again, in this game, he forces a fumble. It helps take what could have been 3 points at the end of that half off the board by forcing that fumble. Ryan Neal is a really good football player.
He's fun. He's everywhere. He's a blast to watch. And he was one of the stars of 3 and 3 out last week. Right. So he's consistently really a joy to watch. And he makes that big play, just gets his hands on like the cone of the ball. It kind of spins out of Kyler's hands and Johnny on the spots there. We're recovering it. That took away at least 3 points. That game should have been tied at the half for the most part, right? That's a different vibe. Mm-hmm. We take the lead and we don't look back, which is super cool. All right, we got J Scott AZ12 still in the Discord, people. Once again, getintheflock.com so you can get yours read nice and early in Colby Parkinson with the assist on the game ceiling win. He said, hopefully win. He was live, live discording, if you will. But this is the K9 touchdown to seal the deal. And Parkinson's right behind him there after a good block. Man, was K9 and the team super special in the fourth quarter? It was, talk about joys. That fourth quarter, man, that was a boatload of fun.
I love this call out by Arctic Snowhawk with the in. Remembering J.J. Watt is playing only because of an encroachment penalty. Offensive line winning in the trenches. And normally when you're facing off against J.J. Watt in a particular game, you feel like you have to worry about that player. And he was relatively unnoticed on the day, apart from that time, as Arctic Snowhawk points out, where he just happened to be in the neutral zone.
This is, becoming a habit in a good way, right? Yeah. What's his face from the Chargers? Khalil Mack. I even forgot his name there for a second, right? Khalil Mack barely showed up, had a terrible PFF grade, and was just washed from that game. J.J. Watt, now washed from this game. We're making a nice habit of taking some of these legends, some of these dudes that are heading towards Canton, and making them non-existent, which is to say, another way of saying we're playing some pretty darn good football, especially on the offensive line. All right, we got Floctimus Prime, Keith Ketover himself, mild-mannered Keith Ketover. He goes out. Whatever that is that Drew Lock is trying to grow on his lip. I called it a luck stash.
Is that what that was? All right. Carr with the in, no injuries on this cursed ass field. That was absolutely wonderful. An in from Travis Homer's Odyssey, going on the road and forcing the opposing team's offense to sit on the bench and watch us march down the field and finish with touchdowns. Finally, we're a team that wins time of possession.
We are still in the Discord, which is fantastic. We are, where are we at? B Bowen, is that right? B Bowen, first in KW3, K9. Damn, that kid's a star in the making. We barely talked about Kenneth Walker, and he's 100 something yards and 2 touchdowns and sealed the game. I don't know. Anything you want to say about K9, Brandon?
I love him, and I want him to continue to be our running back for many, many years.
Very, very good. Great.
Did I say enough? without being too creepy about it?
A little creepy, but that's okay.
I know. I was maybe going for a little creepy, but not too creepy. B. Bowen coming in with the in, building a good NFC West lead. Also haven't called out Jeanbo yet. And in, Colby and the rest getting behind K-9 to help him get in the end zone for the game sealing touchdown.
Yes, DK Metcalf fan club, also known as Lisa in, well, formerly Lisa in Seattle. She's still here. Don't worry. She's not, you know, discording from beyond, but she says in getting to see MVPino finally making some mistakes and then, Thunder Dick the ball down the field on two drives. He doesn't have much left to prove now. Well, Lisa, great use of the word Thunder Dick.
I think Lisa gets the in just for that. Dr. G giving some ins. Parkinson's run blocking on the last drive. Calling a lot of people on Parkinson for helping K-9 get into the end zone. In the other pieces of the Russ trade, Noah and Shelby balling out.
Mm-hmm. They were huge this game, which is so cool. Michael Dixon's big balls were still in the Discord. In the allegory, Pete authored this game to show fans in the first half, this is how we would have played this game last year. And the second half showing us how much more improved we are in our game planning, right? So just calling out that the little yin and yang right there within the game planning. He also says, in, we won the trap game. We talked about this being a potential trap game before having to go to Germany with the bye week. Nope, we win it by 10 points again. Also in, the contrast between the pouty Cardinals and the poised Seahawks. And that starts with coaching, and that continues with your quarterback. And we have that in spades, and they have bums. Out, Kobe's two takeaways that don't count along with the one from last week. So even his out's kind of an in because there were some nice plays by Mr. Bryant there.
William Music with the in, giving it to the sportsmanship and respect for opponents. There was a photo going around showing Quandre Diggs, Mike Jackson, both helping Kyler Murray up off the ground. And one, it's fun because, you know, it means Kyler Murray was on the ground a lot in this game, but also the sportsmanship factor. And he says, pictured here, Jackson and Diggs giving a hand to a Cardinals player, helping him up. I've been listening to the respect that our coaches and players give opposing teams and the pressers, and it's clear they haven't viewed any of these games as cakewalks.
Yep, it is. That's coaching. It's coaching and culture. Even if we win, lose, or draw, we are coached well, and Pete and team have created something special there that attracts the right kind of people. So and again, we had that in spades, so which is super cool. I'm going to skip down, Brandon, down to the Seahawkers pod ring of honor now.
All right.
We got Bridget, I think it's Pronovost, right? In, no offense to the one UDFA, not sure of his status, but there were no major injuries in that stadium built on the ancient burial ground, none that required a cart. Definitely no ambulances or prayer circles, 15 to 20 minute TV timeouts for injury or something that appeared to end a career. That is remarkable. And Bridget is 100% right. A clean game on an otherwise very, very checkered field past.
Are we skipping over the entirety of Twitter? I feel like we at least need to give some Twitter love. I was going to
come back to it and then close with how we close, which is back above. But going with the theme of if you're in the flock, in some way, you're going to get your stuff read first.
At Bailey Libor and out on Twitter, I just had this one caught my eye, so I had to go right to it. Into Woolen, or as he should be renamed, Wool Him. He's starting to get that top corner treatment where teams don't want to try him. Woolen for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yes, that's great. And since we're back on Twitter, the Tory one here at Oz the Great 08. I really like this one too. We talk about K-9 being a closer, but he goes, wait a second. Let's give credit to the pass rush for getting timely sacks to basically be another version of closing out the game. So, Tori, that's a really cool call out because, yeah, the fourth quarter, run the ball, that's Pete ball, all these things. The other flip side of this coin is getting late demoralizing sacks, and you called it out real nicely. Good job.
Gecko out on Twitter at Gecko HTR in to the tight end bootleg play in general. LOL, we ran that play like 25 times and good yards on all of them. Go Hawks.
I love the fact that like the last one went for 51 yards. It's right. We talked about it last week. We're like this, and I won't say the words. I was like, I'm super superstitious when it comes to sports. I'm like, I'm just going to say it's been highly effective over and over and over again, but I won't say the words. And then again, this week, it's just at what point does it stop to work? But until it does, one thing I think is interesting, Brandon, is at some point, I expect us to do some sort of a thing where we boot it like we've been doing, and then something is designed to go back to the left-hand side or whatever the opposite side is, like something like, you know, long developing where, you know, you could get the guy in the drag route, but you actually throw it back across the field. I got this long play thing going in my brain that we're going to see something going back the other way. Just because teams will start to, I would think, would start to cover that play.
I think one of the reasons why you see that working so well is probably what you don't see when it's just a run to the left side of the offense. Because I have a feeling that a lot of those times where it's just a Ken Walker run to the left side and the offense is flowing that way, I have a suspicion that you also see Geno booting out as if he were to be holding the ball. And so that's, I think that's why it ends up being effective. Now, I could be wrong, but it's just a lot of times, you know, once the cameraman's really good generally about tracking the football. And so you don't see where the fake is going on those particular plays.
Listen, we talked about Geno being Sade, the smooth operator. So I'm buying what you're serving there, Brandon. I like it. We got Lloydzilla, Hugh Lloyd. Now I know he's everywhere. I know he's in the UK. I know he's in our Discord as well, but out on Twitter, in to the football gods for finally forgetting about the curse and us escaping the desert with all our big players coming away without any major injuries. Obviously a nice theme here, but people want to talk about it and we're here to share it.
Kevin Russell in our Facebook Ring of Honor group, in the win, of course, but most importantly, escaping the burial ground without an injury. Out the fact I can't stay up to watch the post game reaction show.
Yeah, I wondered why he couldn't stay up. Was it like he had to work?
Kevin's in England as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think he is. So it's getting quite late over there. Probably had to get up for the morning.
Hey, you won't have a problem for the Germany game, Kevin. Unless you just can't make the game because you're at the game. But it'll be nice and early for all of our friends in Europe this next week.
It's going to be super fun. I'm going to be down in Florida. I'm taking a couple of days off. I'm going to be down. I'm actually going to be 45 minutes just south of Tampa. And so I already called the local bar that I'd like to go down to. It's a sports bar, and I confirmed the game will be on at 9:30, and I'll be enjoying a libation or two nice and early, and cheering our Seahawks on from basically the belly of the beast, just south of Tampa Bay, which is going to be a lot of fun. Kenneth Reyes in. Kobe Bryant having a really good game. I just wish he'd wrap up when tackling. Absolutely out. This is a good call out. Geno didn't get any flack. So Kenneth, Geno's floater balls. He had one in the end zone to Metcalf that was almost picked, kind of a precursor to the pick six float pass. If there is some Achilles heel to Geno, which is a hard thing to do for basically any quarterback, the really tight red zone stuff, like passing within the 5 yard line, he's not perfect at it, but it's also really freaking hard how fast these guys are and how compressed space is. There's been a couple times where he had some near picks that didn't happen this year. We'll keep on knocking on wood. And with that, Brandon, the Seahawks were 4 for 4 with 4 touchdowns in the red zone this week, which is awesome.
That was really awesome. Also, Michael West with a question here saying, nice with the early start time for the game against Tampa in Germany. Is 6 a.m. too early to start drinking? And the way I would answer this, I think it depends on if you decide to pull the all-nighter. This is what we should do, I think, as Seahawks fans. You nap probably around 8 p.m., so you can get up at about 4 a.m. and then, or you pull it all night and you just keep going until after the game and crash and probably go like for a good 12 hour sleep. I think however your strategy is to make it work so it's not too early, is up to you.
Yes, and they've got Washington Fish Quest with the old adage here. If you want to drink all day, you got to start in the morning, right? And I don't know about you guys. I mean, I'll ask you, Brandon. I like my libations for sure. And with that, I don't love getting too fuzzy during the game because I lose like the edge of like actually watching.
Right.
So I like to kind of cruise into that 2 to 3 beer zone and kind of chill there for a little bit. And then crack one like post game and let that be my Sunday fun day.
Well, it's usually like Mother's Day brunch where you have the mimosas, right? Maybe this is the week where you break out the mimosas.
Yeah, the mimosas, the tomato juice one. What's that? The Bloody Marys, right?
Oh, yeah. So
you got some options.
I guess if you like vegetables in your drink, you could go that way.
But weren't you drinking like a V8 energy drink the other day?
Doesn't matter.
You're drinking a vegetable drink, right? So it's all good. All right, we got a few more to crank through here. We got Jason Turner in the Facebook Ring of Honor. In K9, is catfishing amazing? The dynamic duo Lockett and Metcalf did great. Jedi Master Nuosu, that's really cool, dominated again. Uncle Will had another stellar performance in crucial times. Noah Fant shows up today with his season-long play so far. Ryan catfishing Neil, reminding Murray that he was holding a football, not a video game controller. Go Hawks. Jason just ripped it through and hit so many good points that we talked about and some we did not. Brandon, strike the Enter Sandman. Scroll back up. He's there. We have to save this, of course. It's all yours today, but I think you know where I'm leading you, right?
All right. Going back to Hawk Van Dyke as people are coming in live with their favorite morning drinks. USMC Hawk 12 screwdrivers. There you go.
Sure.
There's got to be more. But Hawk Van Dyke, our closer, coming in with the in. Walker's shiftiness and stop and start style reminds you of another Michigan State running back. I'll take our prime Le'Veon Bell. In, we hit our Vegas over in week 9. But then with the out, another giveaway undermines the potential blowout and keeps it closer than necessary.
Yeah, and you know, we're not going to end on bad vibes. Although Hawk Van Dyke blew me. It was the pattern he put out there. So let's talk about more drinks. You know, let's talk about the good times rolling here. This has been a blast, man. We're 6-3, Brandon. It's past the point of it being cute and unexpected. You know, it's like this season. I listen to a lot of different podcasts. Yeah. Seahawks podcast and other stuff, tons of other podcasts too. And some of the Seahawks fans just are like, well, no matter what happens, this year's been awesome. I'm like, are you insane? Like, no.
We have a good team. Let's exactly. Talk expectations now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, now is the time we talk about NFC West. We talk about playoff runs. We talk about, you know, like it's whatever happens this year now, it's house money. No. I just can't understand that friggin' mentality. I don't get it. And I never will get it. What I want is to win really badly versus Tampa, go in at 7-3, take our collective bye, and then just even get stronger and look at the rest of the schedule and be like, yeah, this team could make legitimate noise. We've got a job to do that starts now with, you know, holding off the 49ers that I expect will make a charge and taking the NFC West. But this is not about house money. This is not about, oh, we lose in the second round to the Philadelphia Eagles. No, this is not about any of that. This is about gearing up for a legitimate run with a legitimately good team. So reset, recalibrate those expectations and do better to a lot of those other Seahawks pundits out there that are like, making it seem like it's okay if things fall apart at this point. No freaking way.
Washington Fish Quest. I like a hot toddy on a crisp fall Seahawks morning. That feels like more of an evening drink to me, but I could maybe see that in the morning too. And yeah, I'm with you, Clinton. As far as expectations go, when I watch a Seahawks team that's consistently putting up 30 points week after week after week, consistently holding their opponents to high teens, low 20s, enough to get double digit wins in four straight weeks. Heck yeah, I'm going to start having some high expectations, especially when I look at a Philadelphia Eagles team that I think our Seahawks are really well matched up. I think it would match up well against that Eagles team. And they're being talked about as the cream of the crop when it comes to the NFC. I think this team could beat that Eagles team. And I hope it happens when it comes to the playoffs.
I think it could. I think we can. And I think the Eagles are good. I think they have a really, they are
I think
good.
We're good.
No, I hear you. I'm not walking back my words. They're really good in the trenches, and that's why they're good. They are good up the middle. They have a really solid line on both sides. Hey, they run the ball. They have an accurate, poised quarterback. Does this sound a little familiar? Right? The Eagles are a squad. Cowboys, certainly interesting and a good defensive squad. Interesting. Vikings at 7-1. Are they just a purple version of the Giants?
Nobody's paying attention to the Vikings.
Right. All right. I mean, they just barely beat the Commanders and all that. I don't see that many obstacles to us making a legitimate run. And I keep saying, I've been saying for whatever, 5 minutes now, let's recalibrate. Let's keep raising the Hawkra, Brandon. And Brandon, why don't we just close out by reminding the good folks, of course, just to remind folks how they could get involved. And why don't we wrap this thing with just the joyous idea that I want to say thanks to everybody out there, Brandon, because every single week there are so many more people hitting up the podcast, whether that's the audio streams, whether that's YouTube, that's just action out on Twitter, people, the Discord growing. It's really cool that the year in which we're like, you know what, let's go big. Let's level in with a lot more content, that the football gods are rewarding us with what is a special season. But none of that happens without the really, really cool people in the flock just coming to this and being part of this, because this is what it's all about. So please let the folks know one more time what they could do to get involved.
Yeah,
please.
People know where to go for gettingtheflock.com. But I wanted to point out and double back to one of the things you said. Here we are.
Yes.
Going through doing a live show. We're over an hour and 20 minutes into it, and we still have 40 people joining us live watching the show. And that is one way that you can continue to help out, is if you enjoy the show, tune in live and be commenting, be sharing it with other folks as we're doing this live. And that is really, it's, you know, you can share it yourself, but when you join and be a part of it live, that helps, you know, feed whatever algorithm that YouTube has as part of this too. And that can help grow the show even more.
Yeah. And it's been such a cool year. So I am so fired up to get down to Florida, going to hang with some buddies, do some fishing, watch this game on Sunday. You know what? I'll share back on the Facebook Ring of Honor, and maybe in Discord and certainly on Twitter, just the different drinks my morning drinks. I will share my morning drinks, and maybe the rest of the team could share their morning drinks. And we got USMC Hawk 12 there. He says longest 3-in, 3-out ever, flagship rival, you know, LOL. Yeah. You know, it's when we win, there's lots to discuss. Right. So we appreciate everybody hanging out for this. But I promise, Brandon, I will take some great photos of my early morning drinks. I will preview and see what else is out there. I'll take some polls, and I will I'll share them out with the flock as we enjoy this trip. And for the folks who are going over to Germany, have fun, right? I mean, enjoy the beer, enjoy the beer gardens, enjoy the purity laws of the fresh beer over there. And Munich is supposed to be a beautiful city. Go have a blast. I cannot wait. That's going to be what, 65-70% Seahawks fans is my guess. And I just cannot wait to hear Seahawks coming through the friggin' audio on the TV all the way over in Germany, because our Hawkra, it dominates whatever the Bucks think they got going, because we're the better friggin' franchise.
And I think of that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Go Hawks.